We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
Shalom, shalom, shalom be'eretz Yisrael. Shalom, shalom, shalom be'eretz Yisrael. Od yavo shalom aleinu, od yavo shalom aleinu, od yavo shalom aleinu ve'al kulam.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We are having a glorious day today. I hope you're enjoying this wonderful weekend. The heat broke. Yay! And this is the Michigan that we know and love. In this half hour of the show, we will be speaking with Hani Applebaum, who is the author of recently published Millennial Kosher Recipes Reinvented for the Modern Palate. Available from Shar Press, which is an art scroll print, and very interesting. We give this one 2 thumbs up. We have lots of wonderful a cappella music sprinkled liberally throughout the show. The portion of the week is Matos Masai. We're in Numbers 30 and finishing the Book of Numbers this week. Wasn't we just like last week? We're just starting the Book of Numbers. We've got a really cool Hasidic story at the end with the Baal Shem Tov. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. The IDF sent armored and artillery reinforcements to Israel's northern border with Syria as the war between the civil war continues. Immediately on arrival, the IDF troops fired on a Syrian outpost after a mortar was fired into Israel. A new law in Israel requires the government to take away the amount of money the Palestinian Authority gives to terrorists and their families from the taxes it collects to the Palestinians' behalf. Israel collects customs duties on goods sent to the PA through Israeli ports and transfers tens of millions of dollars annually to the PA. In a similar move, Australia stopped giving direct aid to the PA because that money is being used to pay Palestinian terrorists and their family. The $7.5 million will instead go to Palestinian humanitarian aid. A car used by IDF, this is something right out of a really bad James Bond movie. A car used by an IDF official in an unnamed European country was stolen. The official went into a meeting in a hotel and left sensitive army documents in his running vehicle. I learned when I was 16 years old and driver said that whenever you leave the car, take the keys with you, right? Hello? This guy's an IDF official. A thief drove away with the car, which was later found in an Arab neighborhood. The contents of the car were missing. Duh. The epicenter of the earthquake felt in Israel this week was in the northern border area. The quake had a magnitude of 4.3 on the Richter scale and was felt into central Israel with the remaining aftershocks as well. No one was hurt and no damage was reported. Claudia Sheinbaum, a Jewish scientist and environmentalist, is set to be the first woman ever to be elected Mexico City mayor. Sheinbaum won the election with a 55% of the vote. And finally, Israel's tunnel detection system used to probe tunnels in Gaza is being used in other innovative ways. The soft tube probe was used to find the 13 members of the Thai soccer team that is trapped in that cave in the mountains in Thailand. And now they made like a little itty bitty one that the system is now also being used for colonoscopies, causing less discomfort for that test. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Ms. Chani Applebaum is the author of Millennial Kosher, Recipes Reinvented for the Modern Palate, an Art Scroll Press edition. How are you today, Chani?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank God. Thank you for taking some time. Anyway, okay, so Millennial Kosher, I understand, was a product of a blog that you put out, Busy in Brooklyn. So first I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about this whole development of blog development and interactions. It's like really way cool thing. So tell us about Busy in Brooklyn first.
Busy in Brooklyn is a blog I started back in 2011. I had just had my third child, and I didn't really want to work outside the house anymore, but I just needed some outlet for my creative energy. So my husband suggested I start a blog, and he came up with the name, and the rest is history.
Okay. What's the focus of Busy in Brooklyn?
The focus of Busy in Brooklyn is just exciting recipes to get you excited to get in the kitchen again, exploring new ingredients and teaching people from the ground up.
Okay, very interesting. Now, so I know, for example, one of the big things that people put on Facebook is like what they're eating for breakfast. And as soon as I see somebody has posted on Facebook as to what they're eating for breakfast, I immediately scroll right past it as fast as I possibly can. So do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like, I'm not having...
You're not a millennial, I assume.
I'm not eating. I'm not a millennial. I mean, Baruch Hashem, let's see. Of my seven kids, I would say six of them are millennials. The 22-year-old hasn't decided if she wants to be maybe part of the next generation yet.
Okay.
But, which, whatever they're going to call that. But I'm not eating it, so it doesn't interest me. If it was like they invented somehow these 3D printers and you could put it on and I can have it, then okay, then that'd be something. But just to look to see what you're eating. So now I'm wondering then how people are. You're saying, listen, I got this really great recipe. I just did this one, and I'm putting it out there for all of you. And people are going, wow, that's wonderful. So how is that working then, Chani?
So, like you mentioned, so you're not part of the millennial generation. I think that, to be honest, I probably missed the boat on that too. I have five kids of my own. But I feel like the millennial generation, they call themselves foodies. They're very into food. It's a whole culture. And what social media has done is it's turned it into a whole, you know, social sharing thing where if you want to be, you know, cool and hip, you want to post your food. Everyone's posting their food. You don't have to be a food blogger to post food. And there's so many groups on Facebook, and it's just endless. And it just shows how society today is just so into it. I will say there are some people that follow me and they're like, oh, that looks so good, but they're just not into cooking and they're not going to go in the kitchen and make it. But, I mean, I regularly, daily get pictures from literally hundreds of people of recipes they're making from my cookbook, that they're making from my blog. People do it. I think that for me, when I created my cookbook, it was all about making dishes that are accessible to people because at the end of the day, like, I'm a mom of five. So as much as I'm a foodie and I love exploring new ingredients and, you know, upping the ante on my food, it still has to be done in an accessible way. And I feel like that's my niche, and that really is what appeals to people. And that's why they're actually making the food, because it's doable. You know, if it's not approachable and it's like, okay, this is an amazing restaurant meal that I can't go home and cook it in my own kitchen, then they're not going to be doing it. So it just has to be done in a way I like to call it. Fake it gourmet, like the flavor is gourmet and it has that amazing eye appeal, but it's not hard to do.
Okay. Now, so maybe you can explain to me then and to our listening audience out there, which I would say our millennial listenership, we're probably about 20% of the people fit into that demography of those people listening to the Jewish Hour. I don't get the excitement of avocado toast. And I'll explain to you why I don't get the excitement of avocado toast. Because back in the early 80s, when I was a poor bacher, and I was a poor yeshiva student, and barely had money for toothpaste, so I augmented my diet, the protein in my diet, since they didn't give us, it was a carbohydrate-based diet, and I was, I had been diagnosed as hypoglycemic and needed to be on lots of protein and low carbohydrates, so I augmented my diet with natural peanut butter. Now, natural peanut butter is almost impossible to swallow, so what I would do is I would take a dry piece of whole wheat toast and put dry peanut butter on top of it, and then to be able to swallow it, I put avocado on it. And all of the rest of the Bachram looked at me like, Finman, you were a weird person. But I ate it. It was fine because you couldn't taste the avocado. You couldn't hardly even taste the pit, but I swallowed it. And it was like, it was something I ate because I needed to survive. Now comes along, you walk into a coffee shop in Brooklyn, and $7 later, you've got avocado toast. So could you explain the lure to me, please, Honey Applebaum?
You know, honestly, there's all food trends come and go. And, like, sometimes we don't understand them and why there's so much hype about them. They make them beautiful. I guess it's, like, starting off with, you know, toast. Usually it's on a nice piece of toasted sourdough, so you have that crunch factor. And then you have the creamy avocado, so you have that texture, too. And then they pile it up with a runny egg, watermelon radishes. You know, they kind of really like to, you know, if you're a good breakfast place, you're making it look nice. So I get why you're turned off because peanut butter and avocado, no. but I just think it's a passing trend. You know, it's like food gets really boring and they have to hype things up, and that's just what happens. But, you know, it could be really delicious if you put the right ingredients on it. Is it mind-blowing? No. It's, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's not something like people don't like. They're my kids. Even they get really excited when I like put a piece of avocado on a piece of toast, and it's like, "Wow, Tom ate avocado toast." It's like, I don't see what you're getting excited about. It's just a piece of avocado on a piece of toast, and we use really good bread in our house.
But that's supposed to show the power of, you know, of social media, because that's what made the whole avocado food trend avocado toast trend popular. It's all about posting and everyone on then on the bloggers going forward, and then everyone's going to restaurants and everyone's sharing their pictures of avocado toast. So this is what happens in this generation. You know, you just have the power to, you know, start a crazy trend over nothing.
Yeah, and with me, I'm one of the latter part of the baby boomers, and I remember my first avocado when I was 18 years old, because in New Jersey they didn't send avocados from California till I was 18. I was like, oh, this is cool. And at that point, they called them avocado pears. And it was like, wow. Okay, so moving on. So one of the things which is very impressive, very noticeable, as soon as one would pick up Millennial Kosher, the recipes reinvented for the modern palate, is the photography. The photography, it is like, I must say, okay, so I do pass over on Facebook when I see somebody showing me their avocado toast. But these photographs are amazing, and you didn't go out and hire, say, Joe professional photographer. You did these yourself. So tell us about your photographic skills, Connie.
So it's funny, you know, the joke in my family is that I became a food blogger, because when I was growing up, I never wanted to help my mother in the kitchen at all. And the family secret is that it's about to be told on public radio, is that my job was to make a salad dressing for Shabbos lunch. So one week I put a half a cup of salt instead of sugar in the dressing, and everyone was spitting their salad at us. And so it's just a running joke in my family that this is what I do for a living. So basically when I started my blog, you know, when I started cooking, I say when I got married, I was a very simple cook. I made like the foods that my mother made. Didn't really know how to cook myself. Wasn't so interested in it. But what really appealed to me was laying out the food and making the food look nice. I mean, I come from a background. I went to school for web design, and I always, used to do scrapbooking, things like that, and I love laying things out and making things look beautiful and composition. And I had an interest in photography, but I'm not a technical person, so I didn't really know how to use my camera. So really, the food and the photography came hand in hand. What happened was that after I got married, I started hosting people for Shabbos, and all my friends started calling me up and asking me for my recipes. And I was like, why are they interested in my recipes? Like, I don't even think I'm a particularly good cook. But I realized it had a lot to do with how I was serving the food, because they say people eat with their eyes first. And it's so true. And making food look beautiful is really what appeals to people. And even before they taste it, they say it looks good. It's like in my husband's family, when you put the food on the table, you don't say, oh, thank you, it's so delicious. I don't even eat it yet. So that's really how I came to food, by way of making food look beautiful. And the same thing happened with photography. So when I first started my blog, I really don't know anything about photography. And like I said, not that much about food either. But as I continued doing it, it just evolved over time. And I just became better in the kitchen. I became better with my camera. Then I took a small photography class. I learned how to actually use the camera settings and not just shoot in automatic mode. And just the more I did it, I started getting so interested in it. And I started, reading food magazines and following other food bloggers and, learning and reading about food photography. And just, like I said, I always tell people when they come up to me and tell me, they're such a bad cook, they're not interested. I'm like, listen, if I could do it, anyone could do it. Just go all the way back to 2011 to my first blog post, and you'll see how bad the photography was, and the food was so simple and really not the way I cook now anymore. And it just, some bloggers, they'll reshoot old recipes to make them look better, but I never want to do that, because I feel like the story of my blog is an evolution of, a regular housewife who turned into, a recipe developer and a food photographer. And if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Okay, interesting. If you're just joining us,
see how it happened.
Cool. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Connie Applebaum, who has written Millennial Kosher, Recipes Reinvented for the Modern Palate. It is a Char Press imprint from Art Scroll, available wherever fine Jewish books are sold. So would you say, I'm not an artist. My wife is an artist. As much as I'm not an artist, that's how much my wife is an artist. And she's into art theory of all kinds. And she expressed this idea that, yes, you use things like opposite colors when you're trying to convey stuff, and you have depth and foreshadowing. Are you doing those type of things in your cooking, honey?
Well, I feel like art, I feel like everyone has their own way of the, everyone's an artist in some way. You might not realize it, but everyone has a way that they express their creativity. It doesn't have to be that you're a painter, and I'm really bad at drawing and I can't paint, but I'm an artist, in a way how I, I look at food as art, and I'm making a composing a photo and, bringing different colors together. So yeah, there is definitely an art to it. And, the way that you lay food out, the way you compose it on the dishes, rule of thirds, there are different things. And then obviously colors, always so important to incorporate pops of color. But I always say, you don't want to have a really busy plate and then a lot of colors on your food. So I like to serve on white dishes, because if you're, you don't want to compete so much with your background. So there is an art to it, for sure. Can I explain it so well? No, it's just something that I know how to do. But I feel like it's something, like I said before, you just learn it through practice. And the more you, explore other photography and read food magazines and things like that, you start to see it very clearly. So.
Okay, thank you for explaining that. Now, the Jewish Hour gets lots of cookbooks. We have everybody who's got, if it's got the word Jewish or kosher and cook in the same title, we get sent by it by a whole litany of publishers. We actually discuss one, maybe two cookbooks in the course of a year here on the Jewish Hour. One thing that caught our review team was this idea of interactive cookbook. And the idea that a person could buy Millennial Kosher and then go to your blog and say something about, for example, Well, I tried your recipe for Hasselback potato salad bites, and it doesn't look as good as your picture. Could you maybe give me some tips about it? So tell us about this interaction between cookbook and blog, honey.
So it's amazing to see because it's definitely a new age, and it's so easy to, you know, contact a cookbook author and speak to them. So, you know, because I'm very active on social media, on Instagram, my followers have watched the process of the whole cookbook the whole year. They just saw it from the ground up when I went down to Art Scroll and Rabbi Zlatowicz shared with my followers that, you know, that I was going to be writing a cookbook with them. I put that on my Instagram story, and then, you know, every time I was working on it and then, you know, working on the photography for it, they went along on the journey. So it's funny because if you go to my Amazon reviews on the book, you'll find a lot of people, you know, referring to me like Hani, like they're my friend, like they know me because they do, they follow me for a long time and they do feel like they know me, and they say how they, you know, watched the evolution of the cookbook. A lot of people voice that, so they actually feel like they have a part in the story. So it changed everything about, you know, this whole industry, the social media. And yeah, aside from that, I always get messages, questions about the book constantly, you know, on a daily basis. A lot of times I just say, you know, read the recipe again clearly because, again, over because it's very clear and the answer is clear. So sometimes it can get overwhelming because I do get a lot of messages. But people, you know, people love being able to interact. And so every day when I get these, you know, I feel like it's nachas notes, you know, like Mr. Notes that my kids get. But it's nachas notes that people are sending me pictures of their of my food in their kitchens. And I just love it. And then I'm always sharing it on my stories as well. Really beautiful messages and photos. And it's just, I don't think I would have that if not for this whole world of social media. So it's really taken the whole journey to another level. And I think it's a great thing.
Okay. You make a point in your introduction that traditional kosher cooking is brown. You start it with brown challah. You have like a tan gefilte fish. You have like if you're lucky, a sort of yellowish chicken soup, and then roasted chicken, which is brown, and somebody might throw some string beans on the side. So where is now, would you say, traditional cooking, Jewish cooking going? As now, are we taking, everybody likes a piece of roast chicken, are we taking that with us? Are we using that as a foundation for the going into progressing with kosher cooking in the future, or are we abandoning that and starting over?
I don't think anyone's going to abandon it because there's always going to be a place for tradition. Traditional, you know, chicken soup is forever. I mean, it's, you know, that's just what we serve our children on Friday night. And sometimes I switch it up, but I always go back to chicken soup. And those, you know, very basic core recipes are going to be around forever. I think that, you know, it depends if how much of a foodie you are, how much you're looking to reinvent things. I think that, you know, for me, I might add spinach to my matzo bowl so that they look, you know, they're nice and speckled and add some color to my bowl of soup. But there's nothing wrong with having a traditional dish. I just think there are ways to incorporate pops of color. Like, let's say you have a whole roasted chicken on the table. So it's really blah, really boring, but people are, you know, garnishing things. They're making boards out of everything. The charcuterie board is like, you know, the trend right now. Talking about, you know, the avocados, now it's the charcuterie board, which is a loose term. I mean, technically a charcuterie board is just charcuterie, which is, you know, dried salamis, things like that, with cheeses and different fruits and vegetables. Obviously, that's not kosher, but, you know, restaurants, bloggers, they're all taking, you know, their own inspiration from the board, which I've also done in the book, in my Hasselback salami board. You can do that with a roast chicken and, you know, put it on the center of a board and, you know, put different vegetables and roasted vegetables, herbs, you know, make it look beautiful. I actually, at my book release party, I did kind of a, you know, Caribbean take on a roasted chicken board. I have in the book pineapple rotisserie chicken where a whole chicken is actually roasted on the core of a pineapple, like a rotisserie stand. And I took it in a Caribbean direction, and I did like a, you know, a grilled pineapple on the board and different elements that were very, very interesting and Latin-inspired and definitely not the traditional way. So really, there are so many ways that you can go if you want to, even staying true to tradition, and if you have one traditional dish on the table that's brown, that's fine. But just finding ways to incorporate pops of color. Look, gefilte fish is going to be around forever, and gefilte fish is brown, but if you put some, you know, some horseradish with beets on the side, there, right there, you have a little bit of color, and put some, you know, put some parsley. So there's, you know, there are ways to change up traditional foods, and I think that, you know, people are going to be eating that way forever.
Okay. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Honey Applebaum, author of Millennial Kosher, Recipes Reinvented for the Modern Palate. Now, the stereotypical millennial is 26 to 34, single, if living in New York, lives with like three or four other people in the same apartment and has very much little to do with them other than just sharing the rent. And this person goes to work and comes home and would rather do takeout than cooking. And if it's going to take too long or it's too much of, as the expression is in Yiddish, a potchki, so much of an effort, they're not going to want to do it. So how is it then that millennial kosher is exciting that target audience to actually go and get their elbows into it, Honey Applebaum?
Well, I think that you're right about that. A lot of people do come home. They don't want to cook, but listen, if you're young and you're single, you're definitely having friends over and you're socializing and you're partying and you're definitely throwing, you know, putting meals together. Listen, it always comes down to Shabbos. You know, even if we don't cook during the week, Shabbos comes and you want to cook and you want to impress your friends. You want to have a nice dinner. So I would say, you know, throughout the week, I definitely like get messages and photos from people, but come Friday or come, you know, Erev Yontif, it's like, wow, like just nonstop photos coming in, because that's really when people, you know, take the time to cook, which is a beautiful thing because we actually stop, we get away from social media, we disconnect, we connect with our families and our friends. So thank God we have that in this crazy generation that is so focused on technology. So it always comes down to Shabbos cooking. So I think a lot of it is people cooking for that.
Yeah, just half a minute. It just always amazes me. So we in Ferndale we're really pushing Friday nights, especially with the help of organizations like One Table. And people who've never done a Friday night don't believe that we get 52 Thanksgivings a year. So if you could just comment on that just very quickly.
Yes, I agree with that. You know, you always see Thanksgiving, how people, you know, how say it's such a big deal. We are doing that every single week. I think, you know, it's just woven into our lifestyle and we're used to it. So, you know, like I said, it's a beautiful thing and a great opportunity to disconnect and connect.
Okay. We are unfortunately out of time. As again, I recommend this. The review team gives it 5 stars. Again, it's Millennial Kosher, Recipes Reinvented for the Modern Palate by Honey Applebaum, creator of Busy in Brooklyn. You can check out her blog at Busy in Brooklyn. And it's from Shar Press, which is an Arts Girl imprint. Thank you so much, Honey, for coming and sharing us about these wonderful insights. And is there going to be, say, for like a whole series now, Millennial Passover and Millennial 9 days and et cetera, et cetera?
We'll see. The second my book came out, everyone's like, when's your second book coming out? But I'm like, when someone comes home from the hospital, they're asking them when they're having their next baby. So let's give it some time and we'll see what happens.
Okay, wonderful. You'll keep us surprised.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulfenman, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. Way back when I was just starting the Jewish Hour, so I went to Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts, as it was called then. Now it's called Spex Howard Media Arts. And took some voice lessons and how to talk on the radio and how to do the news and how to do commercials. And my coach, Randy Z, said to me, he said, Rabbi Finman, stay away from tent sale commercials. You can't go, bye now, one day old. No, it's not you. However, food commercials, it says, you do a food commercial, Rabbi Finman, I just want to go eat. So you can relate to, why? I can relate to food. Yeah. I've been eating my entire life regularly. Thank you very much. In fact, I'll tell you a story. I'm a big person, and I am 6'8" and weigh 250 pounds. And when I was 13 years old, my bar mitzvah, I was 6'4" and weighed 132 pounds. I was a stick, but I had an insatiable appetite. And a friend of mine, his parents decided that they were for my bar mitzvah, so they wanted to take me to a smorgasbord. This was like a new concept then. All you could eat for $13.95. This was 1973. This was like, wow, you had to wear a tie, a jacket to go to this restaurant. And I walked in and I went to the buffet and I said, so how much can I eat? And she said, you could take whatever you want, how much ever you want. On the way out, the maitre d' said to my friend's parents, don't bring him back again. So that was, so you can see I can relate to food. And this is definitely a book worth relating to. And check it out. It's available on Amazon, artscroll.com, all of those places. Up next, we are in the period we're commemorating the destruction of the temple, and we yearn for its rebuilding. Our daily prayers start with a request from the Almighty. May it be your will that the third temple be built speedily in our day. This is Yossi Goldstein singing Shirya Bona Beis HaMikdash.
Tere, 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 tere Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We are continuing with music. This has become a standard. It's Adar Abim, which means, Adar Abim means like on the contrary, but it really means like how much more so. And it's like, you got to be kidding, or Adar Abim. It's just like one of those Yiddish expressions. This is Yossi Green. It's his song. He's got an a cappella version. Let's listen. Was Adar Abim, Yossi Green. Up next, this is Shir Solo. They've become a regular appearer here. They're just like become ubiquitous. They're an a cappella group. And this song is also relevant to the time. It's Im Eshkechach Yerushalayim. If I forget you, Jerusalem, let my right hand wither.
Ta 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 תלכי. אם אשכחך ירושלים, תשכח ימיני, תדבק לשוני, הולכי כי אם לא אזכרכי.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Marshall Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We are in the second week of the 3 weeks, as they are called colloquially, meaning Bein HaMetzarim, the time between the straits, the time when we are commemorating the loss of both temples in Jerusalem and yearning for the rebuilding of the temple, the third temple on the Temple Mount, where the previous two were. There is a lot. It's a double portion, and there is a lot of ground which is covered in this double portion, these two portions. At the onset of the portion, the second thing which is discussed is the war against Midian. The Midianites engaged in a battle which was unnecessary. It was unwarranted. They didn't need to go after the Jews. They got their, in this week's portion, they get their heads handed to them, quite literally. They were vanquished, no prisoners, nothing. The Jews wound up with a whole lot of stuff. And out of this war and the ensuing confiscation of booty, we receive the laws of koshering pots and pans. It's a very interesting thing. It wasn't just that Moses suddenly declared to the Jewish people one day, oh, by the way, if you ever get a pot that doesn't, you know, if you mix some milk in a meat pot or otherwise, or something falls in that's not supposed to be there, and this is what you have to do it. No, this is specifically after this battle. We learn about the laws of how to kosher a kitchen. The general rule is the way that it became contaminated is the way in which it is cleansed. That's what it is. It's really a cleansing process, the purging. It's not something mystical. This pot or pan or plate or whatever absorbed non-kosher ingredients. And those non-kosher ingredients can be transferred, if used in cooking, into kosher food. So we want to get that out. So what do? If an item was used for, say, barbecuing, so we have to heat that item up to 750 degrees because that's like really the ultimate barbecue temperature. If something was used in a boiling process, it was used with cooking water. Water boils at 212 degrees, so this pot or pan, whatever, must be immersed into a pot of boiling water, which is 212 degrees. If this thing was used for cold, well, then we can most likely just rinse it off and it'll be fine. Then, so now, what's the deal? Is the way that it became absorbed is the way that we get it to be dispatched. And that which was used on fire is purged with fire is the line. You see, this comes all after the war with Midian. Now, we're going to take this out of the realm of history and bring it into 2018. Hasidic philosophy, we believe that the war of Midian is a war within ourselves. The Midianites hated Jews for no reason. And so we look at our persona and we say, why am I hating this person? And bottom line, when it comes down to it, the reason why somebody would hate another person is really for no reason. Even if somebody was wronged by the other person. If someone wrongs you, well, the ramifications. You take him to court, you sue him. If it was some kind of a crime, he deserves punishment. Yes. But hatred just makes you feel terrible. And it talks about in Tanya, Hasidic philosophy, that the way that one overcomes hatred is through compassion. At the very least to say, God went through all the trouble to create that. It's a rahmanis. I feel compassion for such a thing. I feel almighty. The almighty I have compassion for. But then this is a character trait which is within us. And we learn that the way that unkosher character trait was absorbed within us, was it done through passion? Was it done through cold? Has to be exuded, has to be expunged, purged the same way. If a person is really excitedly hating somebody, let them go get excited about something good. Go do something really good with that same energy. And that'll dissipate the passion. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. We got a great story coming up for you. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard. The Spex Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Hey, Schulteman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. If you want to get in touch with me, the way to do that would be go to my website, rabbifinman.com. It's your website, too. I'll just make it's available for everybody. You'll be able to contact me. You'll be able to see some of the things we do, like archived editions of the radio show for, like I mentioned, about the last 2 years' worth are up there. There's also archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U story, all different ways in which yours truly presents Judaism in an entertaining and exciting way. There's also the very important donations page. Yep, it's July, and we're paying for July. Yes, it's... I don't like doing it, but it's got to be done. We have sponsors. We have pretty much close to the maximum number of sponsors that this show will allow, will bear. But that would not be enough to cover the cost of the show. And we rely specifically on people like you. And we have, you could say, well, Rabbi, get more sponsors into a different plan. This is the way it's been done for 22 years. The Almighty has come through in getting people to get off their duffs, you might say, or get on their duffs and get in front of their computers. And to pledge. So let the Almighty direct you to your computer and go to rabbifinman.com and click on the donations page and click a number. Make it a monthly thing, automatic. So that way you don't even have to think about it. And this way you're doing a commandment without any effort. Could it be any easier? And we'll be able to continue. We do this every single year. It's amazing. Every single month we get up here and it's like, sometimes we fall back 3 months. Sometimes it's 2 months. This year, we're up to Baruch Hashem. We're current July. Thank God. But we make a promise. Listen, it's still early in the month. If July gets paid for this month, we don't do this appeal anymore. And you get to hear a longer story. So go to rabbifinman.com. And give a donation. Don't like doing donations via internet. I understand credit cards, a whole business, fraud, these things, identity theft. Understood. You don't have to say another word. Pop your donation, any amount, into an envelope or anything else that's mailable and send it to, you can drop it off and put it in the mailbox too, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. And if you are coming by, Pinecrest Drive is on the western edge of downtown, and we're right at 9 Mile, just next to the cleaners that just went out of business. Anyway, the story involves the Baal Shem Tov. One night, the Baal Shem Tov had a dream. This is usually people who dream about the Baal Shem Tov, but one time the Baal Shem Tov had a dream. And in his dream, there was an old man who was a pretty pious person. And he came to the Baal Shem Tov. He says, "I have no rest in the world to come." Evidently, he was coming from the other world, from the other side. "My son, not only does he drink not kosher wine, he is a manufacturer of non-kosher wine. Can you please help me?" The Baal Shem Tov woke up the next day, got on a whatever means of travel that it takes to travel from the Carpathian Mountains to Paris, which is where this person's son was. And the horse, he arrived in the middle of the night, and the wagon stopped at a house. And the Baal Shem Tov got out, and he knocked on the door, and he knocked, and he knocked, and it was the middle of the night. And the householder and his wife, they came to the door. "Who's this? What? Who? What?" And the guy says, "This is not a hotel. The hotel's down the street. You can stay." The wife said, "Look, he's such a regal person. Let him stay in our house." So the next day, word got out that the Baal Shem Tov, this miracle worker, had come and was staying in these people's houses. And the Baal Shem Tov asked, he said, "There's going to be money collected and there's going to be money distributed. Would you mind taking care of that?" And she did. And she saw people gave donations to the Baal Shem Tov, and then poor people would come and ask the Baal Shem Tov for money, and he would give a donation. And she saw by the end of the day, there was nothing left. The input, the intake and outtake were exactly the same. And this went on for a couple of days. And finally, she said to her husband, "You know, we don't have any kids. Go ask the Baal Shem Tov for a blessing for kids for us." And he did. And the Baal Shem Tov said, "What do you do for a living?" He said, "I make wine." He said, "Do you make any kosher wine?" He said, "No, why would I do that?" And he said, "I think it would be a good idea if you made kosher wine." And he said, "Okay, Rabbi, I'll give it some thought. What I need is a blessing for a child." So the Baal Shem Tov said, "Fine, in a year from now, you'll have a son. And you and your wife have to do X, Y, and Z. You have to give this much charity, and you have to do that, and check this mezuzah. Give him a whole list of things to do." And he went on his way. The Baal Shem Tov left that day. 3 months later, this lady is pregnant. So he thought, came through. I'm going to make kosher wine this year. So he made a special stock, whatever, special line of kosher wine. And he was going to take some over to the Baal Shem Tov. On the way, traveling by wagon from Paris to Mezhebuz, they got lost in the forest. And the householder got out of the wagon to go look for something. In the meantime, the wagon driver just kept driving, unbeknownst that his passenger wasn't in the wagon. And he's driving for several hours. And he looks, turns around, and says, the wagon's empty. He tried to go back. He tried to follow him. He couldn't find him. He drove back. And your husband's lost. In the meantime, he was attacked by thieves. Everything was taken from him. He was, including his clothes, he was left with his gotkes, with his long underwear. And he found a shepherd, and the shepherd gave him clothes. Now I have to, I'm running out of time over here, so we have to be kitzer. Finally, he wound up in Mezhebuz with the Baal Shem Tov. And on the table, this is many months later, was a bottle with his label on it. And he said, wait, this isn't kosher. And he said, this is kosher. Your wife is about to have a baby. They did a special bottling. They sent it to us. Take the wine and sell it here in Mezhebuz. You'll have enough money to get back. Get yourself set on your feet. They had a kid. They lived happily ever after. That's going to do it. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you have a chance to entertain you a bit and educate you a bit. We hope you had a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care. Bye.